Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams July Summer Sale and get 30% off paints and stains July 18th through the 28th. With prices starting at $34.29, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
This is a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.
We are bringing you the audio of the Apple River stabbing closing arguments. We're now up to the defense's closing arguments. The defense of Nikolai Mew, accused of first-degree intentional homicide and attempted homicide in this case in Wisconsin. Very compelling one. We've been talking about it the last couple of days, and we'll continue as we await the decision from the jury. This is the defense's closing arguments. Let's take a listen.
All right, we are back in the presence of the jury with the attorneys and Mr. Mew. Mr. Trefasi.
May it please the court, counsel. So, ladies and gentlemen, in his opening statement, Attorney Nelson said to you, one of the things you're going to have to determine is what happened on July 30th, 2022. Well, what happened on July 30th, 2022 is a group of drunk teenagers led by the ringleader, Juwan Cockfield, saw an opportunity to torment a man who was by himself. They taunted him. They called him names like raper and pedophile and predator. They did this for no legitimate purpose. When they did this, their yelling and carrying on, it attracted the attention of another group, right? Led by Madison Cohen and Dante Carlson. Six drunk teenagers quickly turned into 13. 13 against what? They got in his face. They screamed at him. They called him names. They swore at him. They put their hands on him. And the group of six, they became brave. The group of six became brave to the point that they circle him and start taunting him. They do this to a man who has done nothing, absolutely nothing to them. Then, when that man, Mr. Mew, tries to create some space between him and Madison Cohen, they pounce. They punch him. They push him. They slap him. They hit him again. They choke him from all directions. And Nick Mew acts in self-defense. That's what happened on July 30th, 2022. I just want to give you guys a little bit of an indication as to kind of where I'm going to go, and more importantly, what I think you need to think about when you are back there thinking about the evidence, okay? First is the law. One, There is no duty to retreat. Period. That is the only requirement. In this state, bullies like Madison Cohen don't get to tell us where to go. Bullies like Madison Cohen don't get to get in our face and require that we leave. That's not a requirement here. Keep that in mind. Two, subjective beliefs, okay? When you're listening to the, or contemplating the evidence and replaying it in your mind, you are to do that and consider the beliefs, not the actions, but the beliefs of Mr. Mew. And when you do that, you are to do that from his perspective. At the time that the events were occurring. So while we have a video, that video is from the perspective of Juwan Cockfield. The video perspective that the jury is required to consider it is as Nick Mew is holding the camera. I'm going to address this a little bit later, but the idea of provocation. Whether or not Nick intentionally caused harm to Madison Cohen, that is something that you should consider when you're considering provocation. And the other main one I want to talk about is what it means, because it's different here, beyond a reasonable doubt. So normally, beyond a reasonable doubt is this hurdle, and the state has to jump that hurdle in order to prove a case. It's a little bit different here, okay? Because in this case, self-defense has been alleged. Remember when you're back there. Nick Mew doesn't have to prove he acted in self-defense. They have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he didn't act in self-defense. They have to prove that his beliefs were unreasonable. Okay? So, the way that I look at this video, the main video of Juwan Cockfield. We've all seen the 9-second video where he's screaming at Mr. Mew, calling him a raper. I'm not talking about that one. I'm talking about the video that you've seen probably more than you want to. But I'm breaking that up into really three parts, okay? 0 to 149 is the first part, all right? Before anything actually happens in terms of the attack. And what is in dispute in that first minute and 49 seconds? I think two things were raised in the case that were in dispute. And that is, first, whether or not these drunk teens were actually afraid of Mr. Mew, right? I think to a person, they testified, yeah, we were really concerned about Mr. Mew. And you get to use your everyday experiences in life when you decide what to believe. Does that look to you like teenagers who are afraid of that person? Is that what that looks like to you? Does this photo of drunk teenagers taunting him, does that make you believe in your experiences in life that they're afraid of him? Or is this what drunk teenagers who are terrified, is that what they look like? Does that make sense to you? Because you heard this. As the numbers rose, as the number of people grew, their fear, it decreased. And you've heard Mr. Anderson say over and over again, All Nick Mew had to do was walk away. Well, you heard from each one of those tubers, those drunk teenagers, we could have passed. When he walked over by Madison Cohen, we could have passed. And you heard Owen Pelequin. I didn't want to pass. I wanted to see how this was going to play out. Why? Because Juwan Packfield was recording this entire incident. They wanted to see what was going to happen. They're not afraid. They want to see how this is going to play out. And Juwan Packfield said it best of all. It's for the culture. He wanted to put it on the internet so other people could see. And when you're using your everyday experiences in life, ask yourself this. Do people who are afraid of other people, do they walk up on them? Is that what people do when you're afraid of someone? Or do you try to get away from them? If you're afraid of someone, do you taunt them? Do you call them names? Do you circle around them? Those are questions that you all can answer. Or an alternative hypothesis to them being terrified is, do they do those things because they're drunk teenagers and what they want to do is make a video and put it on the internet? Which one of those two things, based on the evidence that you've seen, which one of those things makes more sense to you? The second thing that I think is in dispute, or was at least raised in the first minute and 49 seconds of that video, is whether or not Nick Mew's looking for little girls. Now, Mr. Anderson gets up here and says, no, he wasn't looking for little girls. But he also says, the boys didn't invent that. No, they pretty much invented that. And why do we, or how do we know that? So that's not on video anywhere, right? They don't mention it, they don't say anything about Nick Mew telling them that, right? Every one of them who speaks to the police provides a statement about what happened. Zero. Zero mention to the police that he said he was looking for little girls. This gentleman over here, Investigator Schultz, I think he said that he was a sensitive crimes investigator. He saw some of this stuff come across his desk, and that would have interested him. Investigator didn't testify. Said he would have mentioned, if any of these kids would have mentioned little girls, I would have taken note of that. So, what's the alternative? Why did they say that? I would submit to you that what kind of person does what these kids did to him, and what would they look like as people if all they did was pick a guy out and start to torment him? What do we think of people who do that? What do we think of people who call grown men rapers and pedophiles and predators for kicks? What do we think of those people? They had to come in and say that. Because if they don't, we know what we think of them. That's the reason they came in, and they said this to you guys under oath. They got on that witness stand and swore to tell the truth, and they told you that he said he was looking for little girls. Well, the cops got up under oath and told you, nah, they never mentioned that to me. What are the odds? What are the odds that that actually happened and nobody mentions it to the police? What are the odds? Two other little points on that. In your everyday experiences in life, Would you expect a man that you never met to walk up to you and say, if you ask him, how's your day? What are you doing? Oh, I'm looking for little girls. Would you expect someone to actually do that? Does that make any sense to you? He's with his wife. He has lunch with his wife and his friends. In order to believe what these drunk teenagers are saying, you have to believe that he has lunch with his wife, he's with his friends, they're having a fine time. Ariel loses his phone, and Nick goes, this is my chance. My wife's right over there, but this is my chance to go look for little girls. And I'm gonna tell a bunch of drunk teenagers I've never met before, that's what I'm doing. Tell me that makes sense to you. Because you get to judge the credibility of what people have said to you, okay? But I wanna talk about what we know in that first minute and 49 seconds of the video. What do we know? We know, based on the evidence, that Nick's looking for a phone. We know that. Ariel said that, Nick said that. They find Ariel's phone in the river, so we know that. We know that Nick comes up to the teenager's tubes, and we know that Cockfield's looking for a phone, and Cockfield's holding the phone. Juwan Cockfield's holding the phone. We know that Nick Mew walks away from them as he passes them. We know that. We know, right, that the drunk teenagers move toward him and start confronting him. We know that. We also know that Nick sees what he believes to be a reasonable, rational adult. So he heads over there to talk to her. And what we know is you can see his thumb, he's motioning back, trying to explain what happened. And we know that Madison Cohen, who knows nothing about what happened, zero, starts screaming at him to leave. We know that Madison Cohen feels comfortable enough to put her hands on him for the first time and move him because, well, she's queen of the river and she decides where people go. So she's moving him. We know that. We know that Nick is uncomfortable, so he waves for his group to come over because the state can say whatever they want. He's by himself. So we know Nick does that. We know that when Nick waves to his group, so does Madison Cohen. But there's one big difference here. Her group shows up, and they show up in numbers. We know that the group of teens are brave, and as this is going on, they start taunting this man who's done nothing to them. We know that. We know that Riley Madison comes over, and now she thinks it's necessary, because she's been anointed something in the river and she gets to tell him where to go. So we know that she puts her hands on him. We know that Nick's uncomfortable enough that he waves the group over a second time, trying to get someone to come to his aid. We know that. We know that Madison Cohen pushes him, puts her hands on him again. He tells her not to touch him, but she does it anyway. We know at that point it's 13 against one. The other thing that we know, because we heard it, was someone in the group, the brave group of six, tells Nick Mew, you got 10 seconds. In your everyday experiences in life, when someone tells you that you have 10 seconds, what normally comes after that? If we have children, I'm going to count to three. You got 10 seconds to do this. Nothing's good is coming after that. It's reasonable in our experiences as adults to take that as a threat, right? And if you think about it, they all blamed. They didn't know it. But the guy holding the bag is Isaac. We know it's not Juwan Cockfield, and everybody else denied it. So who's left? Their buddy Isaac. They all blame, without saying his name. It's like, wasn't me. Well, you're saying it's the one person who isn't here. Right? That's what we know. We know everything here I just told you is what we know in the first minute and 49 seconds. And why does that matter?
Judge, I can't see the exhibits.
And step up and move over to the side.
What does that matter? Why does this matter? Because one of the things you have to consider when you consider self-defense is Nick Mew's reasonable belief that there is going to be an imminent interference with his person. And when you add all of these things together, he has to subjectively believe that. As a jury, as you sit here today, we don't get to look at it and say, what would an objective, reasonable person do? Does Nick feel that way? Does Nick feel, with all of these things listed here, that there is an imminent unlawful interference with his person? And I would submit to you, he does. He told you he did. Right? We're going to see the video one time, promise, broken up into those parts.
What is he on? Whoa!
Get away! Oh God! He up!
What are you talking about?
Yeah.
What the hell are you talking about? What?
Get away from us!
What? What's going on with y'all, homie? He's on camera.
Guys,
tripping. He's on 4K. Yo, the new iPhone got that good quality. What do you say? Yeah, what the hell? Who is this? Yes. For the culture. For the culture. Who is that? For the culture. Who is that? Who the hell is this?
Go. It doesn't matter.
He said he was looking for a little girl.
You're looking for a little girl.
Yeah.
That's exactly what he said.
Weirding us out. I even have that part on camera. Did I?
Some young ass kid.
What the hell is this guy's problem, bro?
Leave him alone.
We trying to have fun. Is he gonna claim you? He's gonna claim you. We don't want this on camera.
Oh,
The second part of the video that I think is important, and Attorney Anderson's talked a little bit about it, is the 1 second that we don't get to see, right? The 1 second where the state is insinuating and is claiming that Madison Cohen was punched, and where Nick Mew has testified that he raises his arm to get her out of his space. So those are the two possibilities as to what happened in the video that you don't see. And I am, once again, asking that you use your everyday experiences in life when you make this determination, okay? And I understand that people in stressful situations don't get everything perfect. I get that. I'm not holding anybody to this exact standard. But what have we heard in order to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that this happened? Well, you heard AJ Martin say that he grabbed her by the back of the hair and was slugging her from behind. Okay? No one else says that. You hear Alex Vang say he slapped her with a right hand in the face. Then I say, Mr. Vang, how can that happen? He's got a knife in his hand. And he says, you're right, that can't happen. He punched her. You hear Juwan Cockfield, who's not looking at it, he's holding his camera in another direction, says he threw a hook at her. I saw that. Right? Madison Cohen says, she said on direct examination, he hit me with a left hand to the left side of my face. And it sat there. Then when I asked her questions and I said, can you explain how that's humanly possible? And her response was, you're right. I get lefts and rights wrong. He hit me on the other side. Okay. But the state says she had a heartbeat in her cheek. She should remember what side of her cheek the heartbeat was in. She doesn't get that right. But how about the things when you use your everyday experiences in life that the state, they didn't talk about when he was up here talking about her injuries? He talks about her falling back and people seeing things. Okay, people can be wrong. How about things that make sense, though? We know that she's wearing sunglasses, right? We know that. Her sunglasses are not broken. She doesn't have a mark on her face from being cut by sunglasses. None of that. Is that what would happen if a 250-pound man squared up on a woman and threw a hook to her face? She doesn't have redness on her face. She doesn't have swelling on her face. She doesn't have puffiness, a bruise, or a mark. How do we know that? Investigator Schultz told us, I saw her shortly thereafter, and she didn't have a mark on her. He says, if I would have seen a mark, I would have taken a photograph of that mark. Makes sense, right? She doesn't drop her drink. She doesn't drop her vape. Her cell phone doesn't leave her bathing suit. Is that what happens when a 250-pound man squares up on a woman? She doesn't drop a thing, and she doesn't have a mark. Does that make sense to you all? Or does it make more sense that Nick Mew pushes her out of his space, Attorney Anderson said, she's not in his face. Well, most of her friends said, no, she was. She was in his face. She was in his face. She was in his space. Right? If he makes this motion, she's not going to have broken sunglasses. She's not going to have a mark on her face. She's not going to have redness, puffiness, swelling, a bruise. She's not going to drop her drink because he doesn't hit her. Which one of those two things in your everyday experiences in life makes more sense? You get to decide that. And I want you to think about this. She knows the seriousness of the case. She tells the police she takes a photograph or photographs. Then she claims to have deleted them in a homicide case. Then the police say, that's okay. That happens. You give us your phone, we can get the pictures. Right? Wrong. They do a Cellbrite downloaded extraction of her phone. Investigator Schultz doesn't do it, but he reviews it and says, "Man, there's no deleted photos that I saw in there." He even goes so far as to reach out to Madison Cohen's mother because maybe she either took the photos or were sent the photos. No, not there either. You get to judge the credibility of people and whether or not that makes any sense. That is not provocation. And just briefly on retreat and provocation. I told you when I started, there is no duty to retreat. And that is true. That's the first sentence in the retreat instruction. If you want to, it says you may consider whether or not when he was retreating or if he had to retreat, whether the defendant reasonably believed the amount of force used was necessary to terminate the interference, you may consider whether he had the opportunity to retreat. Okay. Now, you don't have to, but when it starts, when it matters, is when he's using the force. And when he's doing that, he's surrounded. He told you he was surrounded. I asked Lieutenant Hart, do you have any information that would be contrary to Nick Mew's belief or statement that he was surrounded? She said, no, I don't. Where's he gonna go? So he doesn't have to go anywhere. We don't let people dictate what we do, and the loudest voice in the room doesn't have to win. Madison Cohen doesn't get to make these decisions for people. He doesn't have to leave. The drunk teenagers don't have to leave either. They told you they could have left, but they wanted to see the show. He doesn't have to go, and there's nowhere to go. That should be the beginning, middle, and end of that evaluation on retreat. Same analysis, same result on provocation, okay? You have to find that Nick Mew committed an unlawful conduct against Madison Cohen to provoke this attack. He wanted her to get out of his personal space. The bully in the room doesn't get to yell at you and tell you to leave, and then when you don't leave, doesn't get to get in your personal space because you are not leaving. That's not how this works. The last part of the video is the 150 to 205 mark. Okay? Now, you heard yesterday, the state wants to break this video, this last 15 seconds or so, down into stills. 1/24th of a second. No one lives their life in 1/24th of a second. And you're not supposed to in this case, because you're supposed to look at this case through the eyes of Nick Mew. And if you've watched that video, the first time I saw it, I didn't see what happened. I didn't see him pull a knife. I didn't see some of these people getting injured. Because it's moving like this. When you break it down to 1/24th of a second, it's just not how we live our lives. You have to look at those 14 seconds through Nick Mew's eyes as he was standing there in the river. And remember, he told you yesterday that he believed that he was going to die. But he doesn't have to believe that. He just has to believe that he's going to suffer serious bodily injury. That's what he has to believe, okay? And before I start this video, I'm going to ask you this again. What do we know in those last 15 seconds? We know that Anthony and Dante Carlson were asked by their dad to go over there. Why? To help him. Quentin Carlson testified that he was concerned that Nick Mew was going to get the brakes beat off of him. So Quentin Carlson wanted his boys to go assist. I would submit to you that Quentin Carlson was concerned that Nick Mew was going to suffer serious bodily injury if someone didn't help him. Alex Vang told you. Mew's getting his butt kicked when this is going on. And Owen Pelquin said those guys got on his ass. Right? Anthony Carlson is yelling, stop, stop, stop. He's not yelling it to Nick Mew. Nick Mew's tail down in the water. Presumably, he's telling it to the people who are beating him. Right? That's what we know. Now, Juwan Cockfield found that to be funny for quite some time. You can hear him cackling on how he thinks it's funny that Mew's getting punched in the face and knocked in the face, slapped, okay? But what we know from that video is a 250-pound man, 250-pound man, has been knocked clean off his feet backwards into the water by getting punched in the jaw. That's what we know. We know that in 1 second, Dante Carlson, who throws that punch, runs around to the other side of Nick Mew while he's still on his back, on his lower back, and he cracks him across the face. We know that. That's not in dispute. We know that A.J. Martin, who says he's the peacekeeper, that's what he said, he runs up from behind and shoves Nick Mew while Dante Carlson comes in for thirds and smacks Nick Mew in the face again. I would submit to you at this point, it's coming from all sides and from multiple people. And this man who had heart surgery is terrified as to what's going on. We know, well, let me just remind you of this. At this point, after he's been punched, slapped, pushed, slapped, he hasn't stabbed anyone. Right? And if you listened closely to what A.J. Martin said in his testimony, when he was shown the picture of him making contact with Mr. Mew before Mr. Mew stabbed him, he said, he got me before I got him, I guess. What does that tell you about what A.J. Martin's intentions? He's back in the water now for a third time after getting pushed down by A.J. Martin. And what do we see next? That's Anthony Carlson. He walks right by Mew. Mew doesn't do a thing to him. Mr. Mew doesn't do a thing to Anthony Carlson as he walks by. You will then see, and what we know is Anthony Carlson comes up from behind him, appears to be yelling at him, and putting his hands on him. So now Mew has been touched at that point, punched, pushed from behind and slapped. And now Anthony Carlson comes up to him. We know that. And then we know 1 second later that Isaac Schumann comes up to him. You guys get to make the decision on whether or not he's choking him around the neck. You get to make that decision. I'm not telling you what that is. You get to decide if that looks like a choke to you or not. So at that point, 4 people have attacked McMew. And why does it matter? Why does any of that matter? Because if you find the following, Nick Mew is not guilty of all the charges, okay? If you find that Nick Mew believed, that he believed that there was an imminent unlawful interference with his person, if you believe that he believed that was coming, the 19 or 18 reasons that I put up there supports that, and he told you that. And that's his subjective beliefs. Okay? If he believed the amount of force that he used was necessary to terminate that interference, okay? So if he believed that he did what he had to do, right? I would submit to you there's only 2 answers to that. Only 2 possible answers. He either did what he had to do to survive, or this man who, you watch the video, who's never got a speeding ticket, who decides to go out with his wife that day, who's floating down the river and having lunch, decides, you know what, today's the day I'm going to start stabbing people. I'm going to leave my group, I'm going to go over and I'm going to start stabbing people. Mr. Anderson says he snapped. If he was in fear, he would have left. I think anybody would dispute that he was in fear. So when you're determining whether or not what he did, if he believed that he had to do that to terminate that interference, I would submit to you, why else would he do it? He either believed that or he just lost his mind. Right? This 52-year-old engineer who's married just lost his mind that day. Those are the 2 options I think that you have on that. And the final thing that you need to decide is whether or not his beliefs were reasonable. And the standard is, would a person of ordinary intelligence and prudence would have believed standing in his shoes at that moment. Okay? Quentin Carlson is about his age. And Quentin Carlson is concerned enough for his safety that he sends his boys over. Quentin Carlson tells the police that after his boys have been injured. He tells the police, I get it, they're injured. I sent them over there because I was concerned for the old guy. Brandy Hart. Did you watch that video yesterday? There's a point in that video where Nick Mew puts his hand in his head and says something like, "My life is over." And Brandi Hart says, "I don't know about that. There's self-defense." She says, "I don't know what I would have done. But I can tell you I would have been scared shitless." She's been a police officer for 25 years. And that is her response. State never followed up with her on anything after that. That was her statement to the police. Or that was her statement on the tape. And as I mentioned, Alex Vang and Owen Peloquin say he's getting his butt kicked. They're all over him. Are those reasonable people? You get to decide what a reasonable person would do in that situation. But I would submit to you, you've got something to work with. You've got something to work with. Briefly on the charges, okay? Before you even get to self-defense, you get to intent. You have to find intent on the homicide charges initially for Isaac Schumann, and you have to find them for the others involved, okay? And the question on intent is mental purpose. Can you watch that video and say that Nick Mew's mental purpose is to kill Isaac Schumann? Or is his mental purpose to get another person off of him? You get to decide that. Okay? Under those circumstances, you heard everybody say, anybody who never touched him, he never touched. Right? People were like, "I didn't want to get near him." They didn't touch him. He didn't touch them. He didn't say anything. You get to consider all the facts and circumstances. He didn't say anything to Isaac. Right? Isaac grabbed him by the throat and he stabs him one time. Is that an intent? Is that his intention to kill Isaac Schumann? And when you started this case, you heard that was the charge. Well, those charges have changed. Now you get to consider all other kinds of charges, with all other kinds of mental states too, right? Maybe it was intentional. Well, maybe not. Maybe it was reckless. Pick a theory. Don't let them just throw things against the wall and hope that you guys let something stick. They're telling you they thought it was intentional. Now it might not be. Now it might be reckless. They don't have it. Nick Mew wanted to get Isaac Schumann away from him. He didn't chase Isaac Schumann down. He didn't move toward Isaac Schumann. Isaac Schumann moved toward him. And on the attempted homicides, read the instruction on attempt, you guys. In order to convict someone of an attempted homicide, the state must prove to you beyond a reasonable doubt that demonstrates unequivocally that Nick wanted to kill these people and would have, except for the intervention of another person or some other extraneous factor. Okay? And unequivocally means there can be no other inference which can reasonably be drawn. No other inference. And an extraneous factor is something outside the control of Nick. You heard D.A. Anderson say, "But for medical intervention, some of these people would have died." Well, A.J. Martin would have. Dante Carlson had a hernia. He repaired a hernia. I'm sorry. Medical intervention doesn't prevent him. He's not going to die from that. Anthony Carlson gets 2 stitches. He's certainly not going to die from that. And Riley Madison could have got an infection, they said. And I understand that. But if he wanted to kill them, why didn't he? He's, if you believe Attorney Anderson, he's alone with Dante Carlson. Why does he stab him one time if he wants to kill him? Why doesn't he smash him up? He wants what he wanted all along, to get away from these people. He's leaving, and Dante Carlson, who has beaten him up, has hit him in the face repeatedly, confronts him again. What does he think? What does Nick Mew believe is about to happen? You don't have to let somebody beat you before you respond. Doesn't that make sense? And because they don't have the attempts here, because there was nothing, no outside extraneous factor, they also say, might not be attempts, take a chance on reckless. How about that? Again, not really a theory, but you get to make that decision. I'm going to comment on the video, because I think it's appropriate, that was played, the interview with Nick and Brandy Hart. He lies about the knife. What he and what Lieutenant Hart said is he's never wavered on is that this was self-defense. That he was fearful and that he was being attacked. Okay? That he's never wavered on that. He said it over 20 times in the interview, and it's the first words out of his mouth when he's interviewed by Lieutenant Hart. Some people get some facts wrong, some people lie about stuff. He's not telling you the truth about the knife. Does it change one thing that you saw on that video? That's the reason we want there to be a video. Is so you're not taking the word of 13 people who don't get it right. That video is not subject to change. Attorney Anderson's right. It is what it is. Right? What has persevered through this case is Nick Mew's fear, how he felt, the shock. You heard people testify about that. The whiteness, the wide eyes, the ghost-looking color of his skin. That has persevered through this case. He lied about the knife. Doesn't change one thing that's on that video. You should feel sympathy for Isaac Schuman's family. I have a 19-year-old son. He would be in Isaac Schuman's grave right now. Everyone feels sympathy for Isaac Schuman's family. I'm sure he was a wonderful kid. And I know that his parents love him. But you don't get to decide this case based on sympathy. The judge tells you that. You decide this case based on facts and evidence. That's what you are required to do. And put most succinctly, in terms of the burden of proof and what the state has to do, is they have to prove to you beyond a reasonable doubt it's not self-defense. And what does reasonable doubt mean? Well, the judge read it to you. You'll get to hear about it again. But it's a doubt that would cause a person of ordinary prudence to pause or hesitate when deciding the most important affairs of life. And I would submit to you the most important affairs of your collective lives are your health, your family's health, loved one's health. When you're thinking about that and you have to make hard decisions on those things. If there is a pause or hesitation about what you need to do because you're getting information from various places, and you say, I need a break, I need to figure this out, that's reasonable. Okay. It is a doubt for which a reason can be given. That reason is self-defense. And I just want you guys to know this. When you go back there and you have those verdict forms, if you believe it's self-defense, he's not guilty. If you believe it's probably self-defense, he's not guilty. If you believe it's possibly self-defense, he's not guilty. If you're like, it likely is, I don't know, not guilty. If you believe it might not be, not guilty. If you believe it's probably not self-defense, not guilty. All of those considerations that you would have require a verdict of not guilty. Because the state has to prove to you beyond a reasonable doubt that it wasn't self-defense. So, as I go to sit down, we, Attorney Nelson, Nick Mew, and I appreciate all of your time. The time that you've taken away from your families and friends to do this. The attentiveness that you've given us. And I think it's time for people to go home when you're done. And what we're asking that you do is that you send Nick Mew home. That you find him not guilty on all of the charges.
That's the defense's closing arguments of Nicolai Mew in the Apple River stabbing trial that dates back to summer of 2022 when the stabbing took place. We'll keep you up to date here and bring you a verdict when it comes in, including conversation and discussion on the case all this week and next. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
This has been a special report from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast.